Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call Senate State Affairs to order. Today is Thursday, March 24, 2022. Let the record reflect the time is 3:33 p.m. We're a little late running, waiting for some folks. We're going to move on with Senator Costello, Senator Hall, and myself, Senator Schauer. Please turn off your cell phones. Staff assisting us today. The rest from my office, Carrie, Senate Records, Alex with the LIO. We do have three bills on the agenda. If we can get to them, it'd be Senate Bill 126, Senate Bill or House Bill 157, and Senate Bill 129. But we're going to start off with hopefully five governor appointees today because we've got joint hearings coming up for those soon. First ones are going to be with the Police Steering Council of Alaska, Michael Craig, David Knapp, Jeff Brown, David Ross, and then we'll have one for the Alaska Public Offices Commission, Lynette Blodgett, if we can get to those. So we're going to start off with those appointee hearings, and we're just going to go in order with who we have. We're just going to start off with Jeff Brown, appointee for the Alaska Police Standards Council of Alaska. Jeff, if you can hear us, go ahead and put yourself on the record with your name, affiliation, where you are for the record, and please tell us why you're seeking appointment to the council, and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jeffrey Brown. I've been appointed to the Alaska Police Standards Council, and I'm in Utqiagvik, Alaska. I began my law enforcement career over 20 years ago in Virginia and moved to Alaska in 2006, where I served various capacities with the North Slope Borough Police Department and the Alaska Department of Public Safety's Office of Professional Standards. Currently reside in Utqiagvik, serving as Chief of Police for the North Slope Borough Police Department. My varied experience in public safety gives me a unique and well-rounded perspective on law enforcement that makes me well-suited for carrying out the Council's mission. I want to thank you for your consideration and support, and I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
Excellent. Thank you for a very brief summary. Sometimes that's really nice. So I'll open up to committee members for questions. Senator Holland.
I don't necessarily have a question. I just want to commend him for his interest in serving on the board and just appreciate the desire to get involved in the community.
Thank you. I'll ask the question. You guys all know it's coming. It's kind of a joke around here now. In one way, I asked the generic question, are there any things that we sometimes get bit later that we didn't think to ask those questions? So I asked the catch-all. Is there anything in your background that we would want to know about now that might come out later, whether it's trouble with the law, if you had court cases against you, any other things that might come up as so-called skeletons in the closet that we would want to know about now? Please speak or forever hold your peace, yes or no. And you can expound if you need to.
Thank you, Chairman Schauer, Senator Schauer. No, I do not have anything that would come up that's relevant to that at all.
It's pretty normal for that answer with the police chief, so I just want to make sure that was on the record. And if you could tell us just briefly, because we haven't heard you in this committee yet, I know Senator Holland might have heard you already, is what is the and this would be my last question for this, not trying to stretch it out, but I'd normally ask this one too. If you identified a couple key areas that you thought were things that need to be worked on or fixed and what your solutions are, I'd appreciate if you could tell that to the council for the record or to the committee for the record.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Schauer. I appreciate the question. So I think overall with the Standards Council mission, things to look towards the future, again, we always have to be mindful of any kind of national trends that are going on. We want to ensure that as a professional organization that we stay on top of those trends, kind of not looking at knee-jerk reactions, but well-thought-out processes that work for both rural Alaska as well as, you know, their urban areas where training's a little bit easier. So looking at things like training qualifications, continuing education, ensuring that we're recruitment efforts are being increased throughout our diverse, especially in the rural communities, tapping into the local communities for those recruitment efforts are all extremely important avenues to go about doing that. Again, it's imperative that as a group, when we're talking about those things, that it's done so that where it's thought out, oftentimes we see where regulations come out, they become either financially burdensome and or especially in the time that we're facing now, just logistically impossible to accomplish. Hopefully that answers your question. Certainly I can provide clarification if it didn't, sir.
Nope, that's fine. And sometimes these generate questions from other committee members. One last one for you is on the council, as you're well aware, you even mentioned it, national trends. There has been a lot with tension between law enforcement, local communities, especially minority communities. I don't think we've seen quite as much of that in Alaska, but we certainly have, you know, there has been issues on rural Alaska as far as policing. And there is a difference, of course, with troopers and what's available in the bush compared to where you are, where you might have an actual police force. Do you see any national trends that were taking place in Alaska that we should be cognizant of, and or do you see any solution-based policing community standards that might be worth exploring relative to bush Alaska and many of the problems that we're facing there, especially being, you know, having low manning and it's such a diverse area, you know, so broad in distance? Thank you.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Schauer, for the question. To answer that for you the best I can, so again, North Slope Borough is very, very fortunate with the way in which we're set up here with our manpower, those sorts of items. Where you resemble very much the way the troopers operate, again, I've got nine different communities that I'm responsible for the law enforcement. We do not have a trooper presence up here. I would say where we are unique versus some of the urban areas in the bush is our community engagement is not necessarily higher, but it's just a different level. We have the opportunity to get to know our communities a little bit better because essentially there is no escaping our communities. We don't have the ability to say work in Anchorage and live somewhere else. I would say this is also true, again, with rotational staff that I have, even though they're only here for 2 weeks at a time, that community engagement is extremely high. Just offering a different level of communication. And I think with that open flow of communication, we're able to solve some of those issues that you see in the other national communities. The other reason I think why we don't necessarily face some of those issues in the rural communities, again, where I've got villages staffed by one law enforcement officer for that entire community, we quite literally rely upon our community members to, in essence, back us up on calls. It's very normal to place those calls to fire department members, other known community members, family members of individuals that we're getting ready to deal with, where they are literally there to physically support us when needed. So I think a lot of those concerns about kind of the excessive force and the tactics utilized, I don't know that we necessarily face those same concerns here. And I would also say that Alaska in general, I think we do a better job of the training and preparing our law enforcement officers to be able to serve in these communities, which also helps that. And I would say the way to ensure that we can continue that is to continue to evolve our training. And again, that goes back into ensuring that we stay on top of trends and other tactics that could be utilized. It's extremely important for the future to where we adjust before we have issues.
Okay. Thank you for that, Chief. That's a few extra questions, but being a current serving law enforcement officer, I think you can provide perspective that we need. And to answer some of those questions, because nobody sees it better than all of you on the front line. So I appreciate the time. Other questions from committee members? Okay. What I'm going to do on each one of these is I'm just going to open up public testimony and make sure we do for each individual. So we're going to open up public testimony on Chief Brown. Anyone in the room like to testify? Seeing, hearing none. I see no one online. We're going to close public testimony. Chief, thank you for taking the time to call in today and your interest in serving the greater good by being on the council.
Thank you all.
Okay, we're going to move on next to David Knapp. Like I said, we're just going right down the list here. David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, when you are ready, go ahead and put yourself on the record with your name, affiliation, where you're at currently, and tell us why you're seeking appointment for the Police Standards Council.
Hello and good afternoon. My name is Staff Sergeant David Knapp. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I grew up in Skagway, and I currently reside in Palmer. I'm here today because I've been reappointed to the Alaska Police Standards Council. If confirmed, this will be my second term on the council. I'm employed by the Alaska Department of Corrections as a correctional officer. I've been with the DOC for 17 years, During this time, I have been assigned to Spring Creek, Anchorage Correctional Complex, and Matsu Pretrial. But for the previous 5 years, I have been assigned to the Prisoner Transportation Unit. In this capacity, I perform several unique and specialized jobs. One is that I manage the prisoner telephone system, and another is that I am a DOC gang coordinator. This entails identifying gangs and gang members that are active in the Department of Corrections. I also supervise the canine unit. Because gang activity and drugs commonly go hand in hand, I take the information and intelligence that is gleaned from prisoner phone calls and other sources, and also by monitoring gangs and gang members. I then funnel this to our canine units and frontline staff so they can conduct drug suppression activities with the most current information and intelligence. Besides these primary duties, I also teach a gang identification class at the basic correctional and probation officer academies. And I also assist the DOC Academy team with firearms instruction and other training when they need help. I've thoroughly enjoyed my first term on the board. However, with the pandemic and how it has restricted our work and ability to meet in person over the last 2 years, there is much to catch up on. Another reason I want to serve again is that I like being part of maintaining high training standards for not only correctional officers and probation officers, but for police officers as well. I want a voice in ensuring that any officer that comes before the council for a potential certification revocation is treated fairly and all the facts are presented concerning their case so that the correct decision is made. The question that often comes up is, what is my response to the national anti-police sentiment or calls for police reform? First, I believe that most Alaskans support the police. Secondly, I think the APSC has a solid regulations and policies in place. And if we are to change any of them, I don't want it just to do so based on events that have occurred in other states, but rather build on the existing policies and regulations to make them better. I bring a broad range of correctional experience to the board. I'm a well-rounded correctional officer. I have a lot of knowledge and perspective to explain to the council correctional officer-related issues that some of them may not be familiar with. By having this ability, I believe it helps the council make sound, informed decisions concerning correctional officers. Thank you, and I am available for any questions.
Thanks, David, and of course, as Senator Hall said, for your interest in serving. And I have those two generic questions. You knew they were coming, so anything just in the recent record, I know we've talked before, but I'll ask it currently. Anything else that may have popped up in your record we want to know about?
No, nothing in my background.
Thank you, and then the same question, because we've got a lot of deep bench on the law enforcement experience today. Anything that you see, top couple items that you go, these are things, and I know the pandemic, you mentioned that, slowed a lot down, that you see as problem areas or things you've identified you'd like to work on with solutions for the state through the council?
One thing, it's not necessarily a problem, but what I don't want it to become a problem is because of staffing issues, I want us to maintain our standards specifically for correctional officers and not lower them just to get more people on board working. So that's my biggest concern.
Thank you. Committee members, questions? Senator Costello.
Thank you, and I appreciate your service to date, and I wish you the best of luck as you go through the process again. My question actually is about having police officers located in our schools. I'm very supportive of high schools having officers there so those relationships can be formed. And I just was wondering from your point of view, who makes that decision? Is that a local school board decision, or does the police department in our communities, do they make that decision to have a presence at our high schools?
Through the chair, I'm not a police officer, I'm a correctional officer, so that is kind of out of my purview on who would make that decision.
Okay. All right, we can ask the chief coming up.
Excellent.
Other questions? Okay. David, I don't see any other questions at this time, so I'm just going to open up public testimony if you'd hold on for a second. So we're going to open public testimony on David Knapp. Anybody in the room would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none. I do not see anybody online. Alex, thank you. We're going to close public testimony. David, thanks for taking the time to call in. Like I said, in interest in serving the greater good, so take care.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. We're going to move on down the line next to David Ross. David, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right. Another, like I said, deep bench today, which is nice to see from a police chief. David, when you're ready, you go ahead and put yourself on the record with your name, affiliation, where you are, and then why you're seeking the council.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is David Ross. I'm the police chief of the city of Kenai. I'm in Kenai in my office today. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today for consideration for my appointment. My appointment is to the Alaska Police Standards Council as one of the four police chief positions on the council. As I said, I'm currently the police chief in Kenai and have been at the Kenai Police Department going on 21 years, with almost 6 years as the police chief. My entire law enforcement career has been at the Kenai Police Department, where I've filled all the roles from police officer to investigator to sergeant to lieutenant to now the chief. I've lived in the Kenai area for over 50 years, since 1971. I look forward to my role on the council as an opportunity to help continue to address the need for a very professional and well-trained law enforcement workforce in Alaska, and I'm honored to be considered for this position. I'll try to answer the chair's questions before I stop here. And first one would be that no, there's no skeletons in my closet to be found later. And the other, I would say my primary interest is to continue careful hiring practices to make sure we get the right people in this profession, that we have good certification and decertification processes so we keep the right people in this profession. And then, as the other folks said, really good quality ongoing training so we keep people that we have well-trained and capable. But if you have any other questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Just one more, since you're currently serving chief. The same one I asked Jeff earlier, Chief Brown. With the national trends and a lot of the tension with law enforcement the last few years, do you see any issues that have migrated to Alaska and anything that you have concerns with? That, you know, there's been some bills, you know, flowing through the legislature, et cetera, that deal with that. Is there anything you have seen that concerns you with those national trends heading this way and anything? And if not, that's fine. If there are any ideas for mitigation or concerns that you have.
Yeah, so in my experience here, you know, we've watched these national trends, but we've not seen a real impact locally. We've seen more support here for law enforcement probably than you see in a lot of places in the news. Definitely in our community, we see that support. You know, it has given us a view in law enforcement of maybe what training needs we should have for our folks to keep them ahead of the curve, keep them out of trouble from what maybe we're seeing nationally. But other than seeing things we could look at, I don't think we have the same problems. And then some of the same feedback that they've said, I'm not in favor of big changes or knee-jerk reactions based on what is happening in other places when we have pretty solid law enforcement agencies and officers in Alaska and pretty supportive communities.
Thanks, Chief. I do have one, and I'm usually trying to be very serious at least, Chief, but I was curious if you could do anything about the craziness of the dip netting nearby your home in July. Could you please get a hold of that for us? That place has turned into
we could close all the roads leading to the dip net. That would help.
It might. It just that has turned into the opening scene from the movie Jaws out there. If you watch it. Okay. I lost a committee member, so I don't know if she had any questions. But at that time, if she comes back, we will. In the meantime, Chief, if you hold on for a second, we're going to go ahead and open up public testimony. Is there anyone who would like to testify on Chief Ross in the room? Seeing and hearing none. I see none online. Correct. We're going to go ahead and close public testimony. Senator Costello, just going to step down for a second. Do you have any questions for the chief?
Oh, just my question from before.
Go ahead. Might make sense.
I asked a correctional officer this question, and it's more appropriate for someone in the police department, but I'm really in favor of having local police presence in our high schools just to foster those relationships between the students and law enforcement, and I was just curious how to go about that, if that's a decision that the police department will make, or is it a local school board, or is it a combination?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, it probably varies somewhat depending on the location. Or here, we have a school resource officer, and we've worked that out between the police department and the local schools in the city. And it's obviously supported by the school district. It has been a very good experience. We have very good relationships. Our school resource officer builds relationships in not only the high school, but the middle school. He teaches there in the elementary schools and gives us a good insight and a connection to all the school administrators and good relationships with students as well.
Thanks, Senator Costello. And thanks for the answer, Chief. I agree with Senator Costello. I'm a fan of the program because I don't like soft targets and gun-free zones or anything but, unfortunately, when our students are there and they're left open. So I appreciate that. Looks like we have no one else with questions at this time. So I appreciate you stepping up and volunteering to serve, Chief, and take care of your luck. Have a good day.
Thank you, Chair.
And Joseph, you're online here as the executive director. I see questions. I just want to make sure, did you have any testimony that you wanted to provide today, or are you just here for questions?
Yes, I'm just here for if there was any questions for myself. This is Joseph Lamash, executive director for Alaska Police Standards Council.
Okay, very well. Thanks, Joseph. I just wanted to make sure we weren't missing something that when you popped up, but I appreciate you being online. Okay, we'll move to the fourth appointee for the Alaska Police Standards Council today is Michael Craig. Michael, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you okay, Senator Showers. Can you hear me as well?
Yes, sir. You're loud and clear. So when you can, go ahead and state your name, affiliation, where you are for the record, and why you're seeking the appointment.
Thank you very much. My name is Mike Craig. I work for Alaska Pipeline Service Company. I've been on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1983, the last 25 years with Alaska directly, and the last 6 years in the capacity as employee concerns coordinator within the business practice office. And essentially, we investigate code of conduct violations from our employees and management as well, also including contractors throughout the Trans-Alaska Pipeline system. We also do mediations, assessments, open work environment, code of conduct training along the way. And it's a pretty good fit for the Alaska Police Standard Council for one of the purposes that, you know, we serve along the way. We came to Alaska in early 60s, and then I was adopted into Alaska Native family, grew up in the Glenallen area, graduated from there, and currently now reside in Anchorage. The public member positions on the Alaska Police Standard Council, there's four of them. Two are for large communities. I think it's 2,500 or above. It might be a different number than that, but it's in the range. And then two of those members below, I certainly currently serve as one of the ones in the larger. I did get appointed in 2017 for 1 year after Richard Burton had left, I think a year early. When I was first asked to consider it, I have to be honest with you, I didn't know what the Alaska Police Standards was, hadn't heard of them before. So what I did was I went to one of the meetings just as a, you know, just as a member of the public and just listened. And at some point, the people that aren't on the council, when they go into executive session, the other folks go into a separate room. Back then, we actually were meeting in person. And I just kind of looked around the room and saw, you know, police officers, fire, corrections. There's other people there to be heard or were listening, you know, to the same meetings. So I just kind of went around the room and asked people, what are your thoughts? Like, why does the APSC exist? Do you like it? Do you not like it? What is all that about? And in that hour or so, I thought, wow, this really sounds worthwhile to me. So I did agree and was appointed for that year. I then served a four-year appointment, which is just now ending, and I'm now seeking reappointment for that. Along the way. Certainly, I think that's probably enough. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
I'll just start with my standard two, because you might have forgotten them by now, but it's the any skeletons in the closet we want to know about. And then based on your experience, do you have a couple identified areas that you think are things you would like to work on that are either problems or improvements, and what would those be?
So I do not have any skeletons, always the caveat that you're aware of, right? So that's where you stand with that. In regards to the council, I have really enjoyed and my time there and feel very respected, even though I am one of the few that have absolutely no law enforcement background or connection, truly in that public member, you know, capacity or status. Many of the public members are actually ex-law enforcement. And one of my sense of, you know, how the council is composed of, it seems like that should be looked at, not saying that ex-law enforcement shouldn't be public members, but I think there should be some reservation or some positions reserved for just true public members. Another thing that strikes me about the council also is kind of more diversity from the standpoint of how it's structured. So by happenstance, we might get an Alaska Native, or we might get an African American, or we might get some other race, but it feels like we should actually be targeting some seats or, you know, the races, particularly the ones that are throughout Alaska that may be impacted by, you know, law enforcement and the serving and corrections and that sort of thing. So that's an area that I think we should look at a little bit deeper. Training has been mentioned here, and that's also something that I'm, you know, very interested in. And I understand when I hear knee-jerk that if we were talking about 2 years ago, it would feel knee-jerk. But here we are a couple years in after all the social unrest and all the things that occurred over the last 2 years. And it feels like we can be more settled in, you know, looking at solutions or where our training actually resides. And as a public council member, I've looked at what is taught at the police training academy. And what I was told is that we, as the APSC, we get to see kind of what the topics are, but not necessarily the content. So I'm a little bit more intrigued about when I see the title, let's say, of a particular training course. Well, what is that? Like, what does that mean? And it also seems like, and I'm not saying this is the wrong thing, that we have a very heavy weight on firearms training and that type of protection for the fire, for policemen, certainly, and also for the public. But what I'm not seeing is that kind of engagement training where before there ends up being firearms or the need for any kind of defense, you know, weapons, that we have some sort of training about how to talk to people and not just talk to people in general, but by also culture, race, that sort of thing, because there's also a mix of what that that could look like. So I think there's an area there that we could pursue. There's three different components, really, of what the Alaska Police Standards Council oversees. So you have law enforcement, corrections, and then the third one is the village public safety officers. And I think there needs to be a better kind of balance or focus on each one of those. And I do also see a lot of alignment between the training within all three, but there's a couple of little differences as well that maybe we could take a look at adopting. Like corrections actually does have a training course associated with people engaging with people, like law enforcement engaging with people with the thought of not having to draw a weapon or not getting into that, you know, that situation where you're going to be having to take care of something in a, you know, more of an offensive way. So I think there's some opportunity there as well.
Thanks for that, Michael. I have to say that is, I hear what you're saying, and I think that that's why it is valid to have opposing viewpoints. I like to do that even when I'm discussing an issue from far left, far right, or whatever the political issue may be we're looking at, because sometimes you have to have that opposing viewpoint or it's real easy to get into groupthink. In any group, doesn't matter who you are, you could do the same thing for those that don't like the police. They can have the same mindset and don't understand the other side and what they have to go through. So your points are well taken. And I think those are discussions we should be having, and that's exactly the kind of things we should be looking for, are areas where we can improve, where we can do better. And so, again, I don't have anything else to say that other than I appreciate those comments, and I think that's very important as we look at the makeup of the council.
Hey, Senator Sauer, could I add one more thing?
Absolutely.
Based on what you just said?
You bet.
So my experience on the council has been wonderful. So I've never felt like there was a effort to just get me to go along with whatever's being said. Always when I have an opposing viewpoint, it is respectfully considered. People even come up to me afterwards and say, hey, I'm glad you brought that in. That's not where our mindset is at, coming from law enforcement. So that's one of the reasons I still want to work on this council, is because of the openness and the just the respect that you get for having that different opinion. And so commonly when I vote kind of against the grain, if you will, there isn't any feeling that I'm getting from anybody that somehow I'm, you know, not getting along with the system. I feel appreciated in that whole process. It's been great.
I'm glad you said that, because I certainly didn't intend to insinuate that there was, but I do see value in having opposing viewpoints in any group so that you can have a more balanced discussion, because otherwise it gets real easy to go down this one path and not divert from it. If somebody goes, hey, did you think about this? So it's a good thing to do that, which is why I'm glad you brought that up. So we'll open up to committee members. Other questions? Anyone? Okay. Michael, we're going to go ahead and open up public testimony real quick on Michael Craig. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none. I see no one online. We're going to close public testimony. Michael, thanks for volunteering and for the desire to serve the public and the greater good. Good luck and have a good day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we're going to go, last but not least, we're going to switch over here to the appointee for the Alaska Public Offices Commission, Lynette Blodgett. I hope I got that right. Lynette, are you online?
I am. Hello. And great. You did very well with my name. Thank you.
Thanks, Lynette. Welcome. When you're ready, state your name for the record, affiliation, where you are for the record, and then why you're seeking the appointment.
Okay. My name is Lynette Blodgett. I'm in Anchorage today. The affiliation question, I think my I was appointed as a Democrats representative, so the Democratic Party submitted names to the governor, then the governor selected me and appointed me, and here we are today. And I'm honored and humbled to have been asked to serve on this commission, first by the party and then by the governor. It'd be an honor. And I see it as an opportunity to use legal experience, which I'll go into at the end, to serve Alaska in a direct way. And I think I can contribute by applying my paralegal administrative agency and disciplinary committee experiences to the Alaska public office process. As a commissioner, I hope to ask good questions and to help build a good record for any potential appeals on matters before the board. I think I can contribute in terms of fact-checking and investigation. I'm a fan of consistency and solid documentation in most things, and I think I could successfully work towards those goals with other commissioners. I have a paralegal bachelor's with an emphasis in real estate and tax. I've been in Alaska 34 years. I was born and raised in North Dakota. I've lived in Fairbanks, Anchorage, in the Mathew Valley. And in the last few years, our children have left the nest and my husband passed from cancer. So I've resettled in Anchorage. I'm really excited to commit some time and energy to public service as a APOC commissioner. It looks like a very exciting time for that particular commission with the recent developments from the court. And so thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Lynette, for volunteering to step up to serve. You are indeed correct. I'm not sure if exciting is the right word to use for that, but you are certainly a challenging time in front of us with the changes. I will ask the two questions that I kind of ask everyone. The first one is, I'm sure you heard it, are there any skeletons in your closet, background things that are not on here that might come back later we had heard about, we would like to know about now on the record?
I cannot think of anything. I have a very small social footprint. There's nothing that I did that's out there. I don't know.
That's probably wise in this day and age. And then the second question, as far as on APOC, do you see any or do you have a list of any couple of things that you go, these are areas that either may be a problem or areas that you think that you would like to see improvements in? And what are those for the committee? What areas would you like to work on?
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't given that much. Originally, I probably was thinking like that, but with the recent court case, I was trying to get up to speed on that, which I'm not. I did watch the, I have sat through an APOC meeting, and I found the group, I thought it would be a really great group to work with. They have run a really professional, it just seems so professional and compassionate with the people. I guess I wouldn't know what to work on without spending more time. What I saw looked like it'd be a great place to work on, you know, things that are evolving, as they say. But looks like a great group to me.
Fair enough. You didn't have to have an answer for that. It's just something I like to ask. Sometimes you find some interesting ideas. And like I said, I think you're going to have enough challenges in front of you with all the changes we're seeing. It is evolving. So you'll have a plenty of excitement or work in front of you, I'm sure. Are there other questions from committee members? Senator Holland?
Yes, thank you for your interest in serving. Is this your first, this would be your first term?
This is the first time I've ever been appointed to a state, yes.
Well, I just wanted to...
I've never sat on any commissions or...
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, I appreciate the interest in serving the public, and I wish you good luck in it, and I hope you do enjoy your time with APOC. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Me too.
Any other questions? Okay, this time, Lynette, just for a moment, if you stay with us, we're going to open up public testimony. Opening public testimony on Lynette Blodgett. Anybody in the room would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none. I see no one online. We're going to close public testimony at this time. Lynette, again, thank you for taking the time and patience being the last one to go today and for your heart to serve. Good luck.
Thank you. You have a great afternoon. Bye-bye.
Well. Thank you. Okay, so at this time, Senator Holland, do you have a motion for the appointees?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In accordance with Alaska Statute 39.05.080, the Senate State Affairs Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. For Police Standards Council of Alaska, Jeffrey R. Brown, David Knapp, David Ross, and Michael Craig. And for the Alaska Public Officers Commission, Lynette Blodgett.
Thank you, Senator Holland. I'd like to remind members that signing the reports regarding the appointments to boards and commissions in no way reflects individual members' approval or disapproval of the appointees. The nominations are merely forwarded to the full legislature for confirmation or rejection. We're going to take a brief at ease to sign the report. Senate State Affairs back on the record. We're going to go to our bills today, starting with House Bill 157, APOC report referendums, recall contributors from Representative Rasmussen. Amendments were due in the office by Monday, 21st of March. No amendments were received. Public testimony was completed, and we're just going to open up to the floor for the sponsor's staff if there's any further comments.
For the record, Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Rasmussen. Mr. Chairman, we believe that this will be a good step forward for APOC. Not only does it include additional cleanup language to help APOC run a little bit more smoothly in the future, but also helps streamline the reporting process of certain contributions and expenditures.
Thank you. We have further questions or comments from committee members at this time. Okay. Seeing no further action on the bill, Senator Holland, do you have a motion for the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House Bill 157, version 32-Lima Sierra 0669/B, attached fiscal notes, individual recommendations, and accompanying documents be moved out of Senate State Affairs and onto the next committee or referral.
Does anybody object to moving the bill out of committee? Okay, seeing or hearing none, House Bill 157 passed from the committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. And before I take that, I just want to say thanks to Tom Lucas for calling in today to be online for questions. Tom, appreciate your time. At ease. Senate State Affairs is back on the record. We're going to move on to the second bill today, Senate Bill 129, an act relating to information on judicial officers providing election pamphlets by Senator Myers. Due to time constraints, we missed public testimony in the bill last week, so we're going to take that here in a few minutes and make sure we cover that. And we're going to go ahead and open up for statements from the sponsor, and we'll go through some questions if there are any from committee members. So, Senator Myers, are you ready?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Robert Myers, Senator for District B. Again, I think we did a fairly decent presentation last time as to what was in the bill. So just a quick refresher is that the point of the bill here is to just take some information that's already being collected, primarily by the Judicial Council, and put it into the election pamphlet that is printed every election by the Division of Elections to help educate our voters and help build some more trust in our judicial system.
And I know we made you run over here, so you're out of breath. There is no rush today. So I know you had to rush last time because we went over, but you feel free to take your time. So we have plenty of time today. That's a little different. Did your staff had any or have any further comments or additions from questions last time? Okay. Any committee members have questions or comments at this time? Senator Holland?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just out of curiosity, were there any stakeholders popped up on the other side of this? You've seen any kickback on this proposed bill?
And I will add, just so you have it, we have Suzanne DiPietro from Alaska Judicial Council here to answer questions if we want to go there or if they have anything to add.
Through the chair, Senator Holland, no, we haven't had anybody pop up really in terms of groups one side or the other. We've had just a couple of people show up for testimony, a couple of comments that we've had outside of committee from people, but it hasn't really shown up as any crystallized push for or against the bill, honestly.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Holland.
That's what I recalled when I saw this in judiciary. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I went a little backwards, out of order. So I think the only one we've had any, and I wouldn't say negative comments, but just generally didn't support was just the courts. When Mrs. Mead testified, and that was really about it. I think they don't particularly want us doing anything with them at all, was kind of my read from it, but that's the only one I remember. I don't think there was anything else, was there?
Through the chair, Senator, Chair Schauer, we worked a fair amount with the court system and the Judicial Council over the last year or so with this bill, and while I believe they were pretty leery of it at first with what we were trying to do, since they don't usually get so much interest in their operations. I think we've been able to mollify a lot of their concerns that what we're trying to do is will hopefully help them in the long run, and at the same time that fix some of the concerns they had with a couple of pieces that we had in the original bill, which we either modified or stripped out, and made some different pieces of the bill fit a lot more in with what their specific operations are, different types of judges, seeing different types of cases, things like that.
Senator Costello?
I was wondering if the Judicial Council has an opinion on this bill.
Suzanne, can you hear us, and did you hear that question?
Yes, Chair Showers, this is Suzanne DiPietro from the Alaska Judicial Council. Can you hear me?
I'm clear. Go ahead and put yourself on the record. You know how it works.
Thank you. Suzanne DiPietro from the Alaska Judicial Council to Senator Costello, to the chair. The Judicial Council has not taken a position on this bill.
Follow up? Good. Thank you. Okay. Any further comments? We'll open up public testimony this time. So we're going to go ahead and open up public testimony on Senate Bill 129. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify that hasn't already? Seeing and hearing none. I see no one online, correct? Seeing and hearing none, we're going to close public testimony on Senate Bill 129. Not too hard. All right. So at this point, do you have any further closing comments, Senator Myers?
Thank you.
And that's a good closing comment. Seeing no further action on the bill, Senator Holland, do you have a motion for the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate Bill 129, version 32-LEMA-CR0751/N, attached fiscal notes, individual recommendations, and accompanying documents be moved out of Senate State Affairs and onto the next committee or referral.
Does anyone object to moving the bill out of committee? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 129 passes from committee. We'll take a brief and easy assignment of paperwork. State Affairs is back on the record. Last bill today is going to be Senate Bill 126, an act relating to the duration of a regular session of the legislature and providing for an effective date by Senator Stevens. I believe he is not going to be present today, just staff. Okay. Oh, he's going to be – oh, I don't see him here. Is he, you said he's going to call in? Okay. Do you want us to just stand by and wait on him then? Okay. So what we're going to do is while we're waiting on Senator Stevens – we're going to take him at ease, and as soon as I see him pop up, Tim, if you want to come take the table to be ready, then we'll go as soon as he's online. Taking a brief at ease. Senate State Affairs is back on the record. All right, so we're up with Senate Bill 126 by Senator Stevens. Hopefully he'll call in here shortly, but to delay or prevent too much of a delay, we're going to go ahead and start with his staff, Tim Lampkin, that is here, and he's going to start presenting the bill. So, Tim, when you're ready, please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. I'll remind the committee that the first hearing of this bill was last May. I had a presentation that I did, and I'm willing to do that one again. I have it queued up. It's in your file. It kind of goes over the landscape of how we got here. But short of that, I have updated some data that's before you now. It's also posted in documents for those in the public that might be watching, just to reflect very simply in one page that since 1970 to present, or rather 2021, the overall historical number of legislative days has been 134 days. From 86 to 2007, when we had a constitutional 120-day session, that average dropped to 131 days. And from the time frame since 2008 to 2021, following a record-setting 2021 session of 217 days in session that combines both legislative and special, regular and special sessions, that the average has now risen to 137 total days. Furthermore, also reflected in the chart, it was interesting to note that during and under a constitutional 120-day session from 86 to 2007, we had an average days in special sessions of 10.2 days. And since we have been under a statutory 90-day sessions, the average number of days that were in special sessions has more than doubled to 21.1 days in special sessions. The point there being that it's shown in the past that the trend is that we found a sweet spot in 120 days sessions to get the critical work done that we need to do, particularly passing a budget. With a lot of these days, with a lot of federal money coming in, we have the same amount of work to do, but we shackled ourselves with 30 less days to do that same amount of work. Furthermore, because of the nature of our budget and information that's critical to us to make these policy decisions, funding decisions, we're giving ourselves only 90 days to process and understand and make decisions on those monies. Senator's contacting me that he's unable to call in for some reason. He's asking if we could call him. I'm not sure if that's an option. I could hold my phone up to the microphone, perhaps. But
we will have another hearing, Tim, so we can have him come in. That's fine. If just tell him that's okay today, you can brief it, and we'll come back.
Okay.
It's okay. We can do that.
How do you do that? So we've got a lot of important funding decisions to make. The administration, executive branch, has year-round access to that information that they're working with it continually throughout the year, and we're figuratively sort of spoon-fed that information in 90 days to make these decisions. So when we limited ourselves, the legislative branch, the people's branch, the deliberative branch, the deliberative process that we go through, when we limit that to 90 days, it's a direct shift in power from the legislative to the executive. So that's sort of the political theory of it all. And that's an overall high-level view of the concepts that we're dealing with here. I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm happy to go through the presentation or parts of it quickly, if you wish, from last year.
And we're not in a rush. I mean, I'm not going to keep us here just to get to 5 o'clock, but there's no, you know, we're not in a rush here to answer questions. I do have one. Looking at the chart, you talk about those days there and the averages. What was the average regular session days? Because I don't see that anywhere in there. In other words, because you've got a combination of special session and others. Hold on one second. He knows the number, right? The 465, 4648, but he's not able to connect. Is that
requesting brief at ease?
Yep, brief at ease.
That's all I mean.
Okay, Senate State Affairs back in the record. Sorry, folks, a little bit of a comm issue there, communications, sorry. I do have that question. So, yes, if we could, maybe you have the data. So we talked about, like, the combination of special and regular, but what under the regular session, and I guess you could do when it was 90 days or under 120, do you have that data for how many days we normally do in a regular session?
Mr. Chairman, so I do. I think this is it. This is the total sessions that you're looking at right now.
What page is that, Tim?
Well, that's in the presentation on page,
I think I found it. Thanks.
13.
Got it.
However, it's important to distinguish that when we're talking about regular sessions, the statutory session has either been 90 or 120 days, since statehood anyway. That's another conversation. But and so because of that, with very few exceptions, did we always push right up to 90 days, or rather right up to 120 days? Or technically these days it's 121. So with very – and I have a – it should be in your packet, but by and large, every regular 120-day session was right at 120, 119, 122, so that the average is, you might as well call it 120.
That's regular
sessions, yes.
And that it was irregardless of whether it was under a 90 or 120 day constraint.
Senator Schauer, I was just able to get on the line. If you can hear me.
I can hear you. You are now loud and clear, Senator Stevens.
Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate your holding a hearing. I apologize I can't be there. I'm here for it, home for a Comfish meeting, but appreciate having a chance to speak if you can put me in.
Yep, you are the sponsor of the bill, so we'll kind of do a circle back on my favorite terms, and we'll start with you. So Tim was at some point through the briefing, so you have the floor, Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Schauer, Gary Stevens, Senate District P. Pleasure to be with you. You know, this is this bill, Senate Bill 126, is, of course, a 120-day session. And as you may recall, we've had a long period here from 2006 to try this out and to see how it works. But it really has not worked too well. You know, the Superior Court decided that session, according to the Constitution, was 121 days. So that's really what we're talking about, 121 days in the Constitution, and then 90 days based on the initiative that passed in 2006. And the real problem, Senator, is that it simply has not worked. We've tried it. We've done as fair a job as we could, but in the end, it really hasn't worked very well. Particularly when you realize that, it barely passed, and it was sort of passed by folks who had personal plans and needed to get back to their businesses and wanted a shorter session. But you know, things have changed. The legislature is in a much different place than it was at that time. Particularly when you realize that we're the biggest, the legislature of the state of Alaska, our budget is the biggest budget in the state of Alaska. It does more than any other budget out there. And then to realize that we also have responsibility for the permanent fund, which when you realize that per capita, the permanent fund is really the biggest fund, not only in the country, but in the world, the biggest fund on the planet when you take it per capita. So I think it's really important that the legislature be able to meet in the time it needs to get the job done. That requires us to be there. We're the only without us in session. The public is losing out on having a connection. So I guess that's about it. I want to make sure you understood my position. I appreciate that that Tim is there. But really, to be an effective policymaking body, to avoid being dominated by the executive branch, I think we need more than 90 days. So I simply want to say, Senator, that we've tried it, that it has not worked, and we need to get back and do it right. I think 121 days is, to follow the Constitution, is the right way to approach it. So I appreciate your hearing, Bill. I know Tim can go into much more detail, and thanks so much.
Could I ask you just a question or two, Senator Stevens, if you have another minute? Thanks. And I'm going to ask them just because, of course, some of the questions come in. So they're hard questions for us. So I'm going to ask them of the bill sponsor. But one of them is, well, the people passed it, and this would apply to any initiative. So the question would be, what are your thoughts on, you know, the fact that we would essentially be overriding the will of the people? And we certainly have the legislative authority to do so. We can. But I have gotten some questions on this bill that specifically asked, well, the people passed it. So why would you override it? And I just offer the floor so you could have that. And I just have one more question after that.
Well, that's a very, very good point. And I do appreciate it. And I know the public did tell us that they wanted us to get out of there in a shorter period of time, in 90 days. But, you know, it just has not worked. And the public has really lost out on this process, too, because they don't have us there to be their funnel to know what's going on, to hear what's going on, and for us to fully represent them. We represent, you know, this enormous budget, enormous projects around the state. We've got these federal monies coming in that are not going to slow down for many years. And now we're talking about even at 121 days that we may have to come back after that to deal with the federal money. So I think if we approach it properly, 121 days is adequate. It works. Now, I know it's not what the public voted for, but that was in 2006. Times have changed. Yeah, from 2006 to now, we are now responsible for not only the largest budget in the state, but also the largest fund in the permanent fund. And that's an important thing to realize, that we need to make sure that we are there and minding the state's business and watching out what's happening. So I appreciate that the public did pass that in 2006, but we're considerably different now as a state than we were at that time.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. And I'll ask the second one as well. Some of the comments are, well, other states, you know, have complicated budgets and certainly bigger budgets. They're bigger states, without saying. But some of them certainly do it in less amount of time, or they might have the every other year type of a thing. So I'm just providing a chance for you to answer those questions. So regarding, you know, how Alaska is, and you certainly already illuminated some of that, of the size of the budget, PFD, and other considerations we have. What would your response be for those that say, well, other states that are even bigger in population and size of a budget can do it in less time than we do it? So I just, if you wouldn't mind putting that on the record too, please. Thank you.
Well, I think, you know, we've tried it. We honestly have tried it, and it's never worked. We've never been able to keep it to 90 days. Oh, we have, I think, once. Tim will give you those specifics. But just so many big issues that we're facing, that we continue to face. And I think just the fact that, as you say, the permanent fund itself is big, the fact that our budgets are large and we're doing a lot, the fact that we've got all of these state monies coming in, you know, I would question whether other states are going to be able to deal with all of these federal funds coming into their states, massively changing their budgets in the time they have. I don't see how they can do it in every other year or even a shortened session. So, you know, the proof is in the pudding. It has not worked. And we found ourselves going back to the constitutional issue of 121 days. Tim will give you those specifics, but simply it's very clear that we've got to get it right, and 90 days is not right.
Okay, thank you, Senator Stevens. Just wanted to throw that out. And while we've got other committee members, any questions for Senator Stevens? Senator Costello.
Okay, thank you, and thank you, Mr. Lampkin and Senator Stevens, for the presenting this bill. We've established that there is a conflict between the Constitution and our statutes, and my question has to do with, does that conflict result in higher costs because legislative affairs is planning on a particular end date and then we don't reach that?
Well, certainly there's a higher cost the longer we are there, no question about it. But legislative affairs plans for it, is aware of it, and knows that we, you know, even though we always talk about a 90-day session, we've hardly been able to really achieve that. So, yeah, it's more costly, no question about it, but we've got the funds to be able to do the 121-day session.
Follow-up, Senator Costello.
Thank you. Actually, my question had to do with the confusion between the two conflicting dates, and are we preparing for an end at 91 days and then having to extend? For example, does the ferry system plan on getting our cars moved out, assuming we're following the statute, and then we continue past that date, and then they have to plan for a different exit date. So my question has more to do with legislative affairs and the planning that has to happen to wind the session down.
Well, that's a very good point, Senator Costello. Certainly the plans have to be there for both the 90-day and 121-day session. I think you'll find that Ledge Council is doing that, has always been able to do that. But you're right, there are things like the Marine Highway that takes folks' cars back that have to plan on 90 days, knowing that it probably is not going to happen. I'm not sure how much time they put into that. But it'd be good to talk to the Legislative Council and see what their input might be.
Good. Senator Holland, I think you had a question?
Yeah, either for the sponsor or Mr. Lamkin. I can imagine that there are so many variables involved. It seems extremely ironic that we put a 90-day limit and then we chronically go over in more and longer regular sessions and in longer special sessions. Is there any one part of it that's been identified that drives that extended time, or is it just too many variables to actually pick any one activity that causes it to go into longer sessions?
Well, thank you, Senator. I'd say that one of the issues, of course, is the number of pieces of legislation, the number of the legislators that ask for several pieces of legislation to be planned out by our legal affairs folks. That takes time. But you know, this people who want to see a shortened session, I think they aren't really aware that it always takes time in the legislative process. You know, we have three committees on the Senate side and three on the House side for almost every bill. It's just a lengthy process to do it right. So if you want fast, you know, have a monarch. But if you want to take your time, make sure you do it right. I think the American legislative system is the best way to do that. So you're right. It does take long. And partly, I think part of the problem is the amount of legislation that we allow to go. Any legislator can propose any piece of legislation, and it takes time to move through all that. As you well know, as chairman of the committee, you've had a lot of bills in front of you.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, just the statement. I would probably bet that if we get rid of the 90-day requirement, that it'd be interesting to see when those numbers go back down again. But I do believe it's going to be 121 days is a sweet spot.
Thank you, Senator Holland. I would actually argue that probably if we were able to clear the PFD off the docket, we would see this, because this is when we started with the special sessions and jacking our days up. As soon as we started sitting here arguing about that month after month, and that is a big part of our problem. So I would imagine you would see a drop if we ever solved the problem. Senator Stevens, did you have any further comments? I know you're at home, so we can clear you off and follow up with Tim. I just want to make sure we had a chance to ask you questions and give you the floor as needed.
Well, thank you, Senator Schauer. I really appreciate that, and Tim can provide the details. Thanks so much for hearing me.
Thanks, and I appreciate you calling in. Have a safe trip.
Thanks.
All right, Tim, we'll go back. You might have had any answers there for there's a couple times you were leaning forward. So if there's anything you want to highlight or follow up on, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Just to compliment the words of the Senator, this all started with this election pamphlet slide there. That's, again, part of the presentation from last year. The platform used by the proponents of a 90-day session were, dare I say, misleading. That offered that this policy would result in a number of other things that would reduce the cost of government, would result in more legislators running, that all these other states have shorter sessions, and all these other efforts and bills were introduced over time to shorten the sessions. Every argument has since, in reality, not been the case. For example, I think there was a comment, I believe it was from Senator Holland about, and or Senator Costello, about reducing the costs of the legislature. In fact, you know, there has really been no substantial change in legislative budget. It essentially took that 30-day difference and shifted from regular session budget and put it in as part of a special, in anticipation of special session budget. I think, in fact, though, as we can find out from LIA to confirm, that's correct. Your intuition is right that when we have things and plans in motion to adjourn at 90 days, particularly with the ferry schedule, which these days is very expensive. Those cancellation fees and so forth are painful. That in and of itself clearly results in increased costs when we have to make such cancellations for being here longer than we expected. But otherwise, things like travel and per diem, technical expenses associated with having interim meetings and special sessions, all of those things are going up. I hope that helps clarify that component of the argument of shorter versus longer session.
Tim, I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb here, but I'm going to theorize this and I'm not trying to maybe a little bit of devil's advocate, just playing the other side for a minute. I think if you look at the last 6 or 7 years, certainly once the previous governor had done what he did with the PFD, we've been in kind of chaos mode here. It's really thrown a monkey wrench in. And if you were to look at the data, and maybe this is something you could bring back if you haven't already, and you might have, if you look at what the data did with your summary on the chart to about the 2016, I think it was, when that first happened with the dividend, where were the biggest spikes? In other words, has that really been a lot of what we've seen since 2008 that has made it so high for the number of days and the things? Because clearly that's a lot of chaos and special sessions that some of us have gone through relative to that. It's been part of the battle the entire time I've been here for 5 years. I would be curious if you could either comment on it now or if you needed to take it back for the next hearing, where you could look at starting from the time that the PFD was, that formula was not followed and all the things that followed that, what that looks like, if there's a difference there. It is.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, the first year it took effect, the 90-day session took effect statutorily, was in 2007. And so for the past, 15 years, it has on only two occasions technically concluded its business, the legislature's business, in 90 days. I suppose you might count 2009, if you like, because it was a 90-day adjournment with one special day, so technically 91. And just to give a nod to Senator Stevens, those 2 years were when Senator Stevens was Senate president. But in any event,
touche.
I think it's fair to say that the PFD's conversation has contributed to the special session, but I would be hesitant to agree that it was entirely the result of the
Tim, I don't want us to say that it was. I just want to look at it because when I circle, if I circle the preponderance and I circle the highest parts of the chart, it's in the years when we started having special sessions and arguments over the PFD and a lot of extra battles that's caused. And again, I agree with you. I'm not trying to say it's the reason. I just wonder if the political battles we have faced since then over budgets and all these different things have contributed. And the right answer may still be to do this. I just want to make sure that we're doing it on the right data. And it would certainly seem like that's a lot of what we have seen of where those days have increased based on that.
I would respectfully, Mr. Chairman, I would theorize that in the future, if we were to continue to try the 90-day session, there would be any number of other issues coming along that would very likely hold us past 90 days.
And you're not trying to tell us that it's political here, are you? That's difficult. Okay, fair enough. Other questions, comments from committee members at this time? I think we've dug about as far down on that rabbit hole as we want to go for the day. Seeing and hearing none, we're going to go ahead and set this bill aside. Thanks, Tim, for coming in. If anybody has amendments, they're going to be due to my office by Monday the 28th of March. Close business. That will conclude our business for today. Senate State Affairs Committee will be meeting again next Tuesday, March 29th, 2022 at 3:30 p.m. back in this room. Seeing no other business before the committee, we're adjourned at 4:46 p.m. Good day.